Well, welcome back to On Further Review, where we like
been
to sit.
It's been a little while.
I was going to say where we like to sit down and talk about things from sports history. But to be honest, our last episode at this point classifies for some sports history.
Yeah.
It's been a little bit. Welcome back, though. Cameron here with Micah, talking about some sports, things we love. We've had a little craziness here in the last couple months. I welcomed my first child, little boy. So adjusting to that, adjusting to a move as well. And I know for you, you've had some craziness recently of late.
Yeah, nothing like a new child and a move, though. That's kind of, typical work stuff.
Yeah,
it's pretty eventful, especially a move across the country too. And it sounds like you guys are all settled in and we can get rock and rolling again. And we're actually talking about today about the university of the state you moved to, Oklahoma.
This is true. So we wanted to try to catch up real quick on what we've missed so far, or what's transpired in the sports world since we last had a time to chat. And one of the big things is, the college football, it's back. We got fans in the stadiums. We, just the full fledged football season back here in swing. And a huge part of conversation in college football world is Texas and Oklahoma leaving the Big 12 to go to the SEC, which we know why. It's just because it means more. As the SEC would like you to have. But yes, to make it plain, I did move here just so I could be qualified to talk about this. Now residing in Oklahoma.
Are you now a SEC fan? Are you the guy chanting it that at the Sooner games, SEC, SEC?
What you're really asking is when the Sooners lose 5 games in a season for the first time because they went to the SEC, am I going to be the Vandy fan that's in the stands taking credit for the SEC?
No, not quite Vandy. More like a, like a Ole Miss or like a Arkansas, something like that. Middle of the pack. a Mizzou.
Yeah. I mean, I have never been shy about the fact that I think the SEC conference is loaded with talent.
It's
very top heavy, but perhaps overstated as far as the depth of the conference, as you alluded to with the top heavy. I mean, any conference that had Bama in it would be under Nick Saban would be considered the best conference in the land. It's just what he's done year in, year out is incredible. Absolutely incredible. It reminds me of kind of what we saw in the NFL for a while with the New England Patriots. I don't know 15 years from now, if there's another Bama like this, if there's another Patriots like the dynasty we saw, in the NFL, what Alabama has been able to do is unprecedented and I think historical. So that's not to get off track, but the SEC is, again, a very stout conference. It has produced a lot of national champions over the last couple decades. I think there's understanding and reasoning as far as why these teams are making the jump, but there's always going to be the nostalgia that feels ruined, the saying goodbye to the past that I think is going to be really painful. I have yet to meet somebody who is a Oklahoma Sooner fan or a Texas Longhorn fan who is like, yeah, we're pumped about going to the SEC. Like,
really? That's kind of surprising.
Maybe they exist. We just haven't crossed paths. But
are they just cautious about the level of talent and being able to compete for championships in the SEC, or what's the reason for not being excited about that?
I think, I'm guessing a little bit, but I'm
asking
think
you as a
resident,
married to a Sooner fan, as a resident of Oklahoma, I feel like you can speak in all things Texas.
Yes, there you go. Yep. I personally think the vibe is twofold. One, the SEC was always the teams to beat, right? As much as people outside the SEC want to hate on the SEC, say it's overblown, say, it's not as impressive as they want to make it sound. You just, as a different conference, I think Big Ten, Pac-12, any of them, especially Power Five, Group of Five, there was a little something extra if you beat Auburn in a bowl game, if you beat LSU in a bowl game, because you knew that it was perceived by people, again, the national media factors in, but it's perceived by people as a very good win. So there's that aspect that's going away of we're now one of them. We're now one of what we used to see as this competitive force in the SEC. And then I think a huge factor probably for maybe some of the not full-armed embracing of the SEC is the nostalgia, the past, the history, the playing teams from right next door, playing teams from in your backyard. And I think at the foundation of conferences, that was always the thing, right? The conferences were kind of formed geographically where you played your neighbors, you and that kid competed against each other in high school and you went to different universities and continued your rivalry. You know, there was always that the Texas kid that comes over to Oklahoma, vice versa, the Oklahoma five-star that signs with those hated Longhorns. You know, in the Big Ten country, you've got, you know, the kid from Detroit that goes to Ohio State, or the kid from Columbus that plays in Ann Arbor. Like there's always been that geographical idea. And while the SEC definitely encompasses the area surrounding the Oklahomas and specifically Texas, it's still the Southeast Conference. So geographically, you know, these are programs in Texas and Oklahoma that geographically we wouldn't think of as Southeast, you know? So I think those are huge factors. I think it's just, I think 5 years from now, no one will feel, you know, a certain way about it. We Oklahoma played Nebraska for the first time this year in a while. And that was always a huge rivalry. And we'll kind of dive into that when we talk about, you know, conference realignment, which is what we want to talk about today. You know, at one point in time, it was the Big Eight, right? And it joined into the Big 12. And now
the South, was it the Southwest Conference, which is basically Texas teams with like Texas Tech, Texas A&M. I can't remember if Baylor was part of that or what the other, but maybe they're part of that as well too.
Yeah.
But basically the four Texas teams joining with the eight Big Eight teams and then formed the Big 12. And that really was, I mean, think about it though. That was a powerhouse conference throughout the BCS era. You have, you know, Nebraska was in there. Nebraska won a couple of championships. Oklahoma won a bunch. You had that memorable Texas versus USC with Vince Young
there. Matt Leinart, yeah. Reggie Bush. Yeah.
Yeah. So you had some, great, and plus all the different, you know, teams that went through there as well too. But you've definitely had some talent through the Big 12 years.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's what they formed. And I think the biggest thing, and, you know, kind of what we want to talk about today is looking back and seeing how these things formed, the ebbs and flows, right? So how these conferences formed, because now we're seeing, and we have seen for a couple of years, but these two programs make it feel very drastic because they were just stalwarts of a conference. Texas and Oklahoma were foundation pieces in what the Big 12 has been.
So I'm going to throw some out to you right now. So we've seen conference realignment happen throughout the years, right? We saw Mizzou and A&M go over to the SEC, right? We've seen Nebraska join the Big Ten, Penn State join the Big Ten. We've seen Miami
Rutgers.
Go from the Rutgers. Yeah, we've seen Miami go from the Big East to the ACC. Why haven't we seen the Big 12 add teams? All these other conferences are adding teams, they're adding markets, adding things like that. Is that kind of, I wonder if that's what did it for Texas and Oklahoma, is that their conference really isn't out there trying to expand their, you know, expand their market, expand their, you know, their viewer base.
Yeah. I mean, it very well could be. I think, you know, if you look back on both the formation of the Big 12, so just real quick, like history recap, by 1960, the Big Eight was Colorado, Iowa State, Kansas, Kansas State, Missouri, Nebraska, Oklahoma, and Oklahoma State. And the Southwestern Conference was Arkansas, Baylor, Oklahoma State, Texas, Texas A&M, SMU, TCU, like a lot of those Texas schools, like you said. So the Big 12 first comes into existence in 1996. And a huge reason for
that's not that long ago, just for
right. I
mean, put in perspective of college football. That's really not that, that's really recent history.
Right. And yeah, especially like the Big Eight, if you want to call that the foundation of what became the Big 12, I mean, all those teams were pretty much settled and included by 1960, the ones all the way through 1996. So you talk about like the history, even the history of college football in the South, in Texas and Oklahoma, in this area, you know, that was the foundation, was the big school from the Southwest in Texas and the big schools from the Big Eight in Nebraska and Oklahoma. And, you know, some of those dominance, obviously Oklahoma State had a good run with Barry Sanders, you know, Thurman Thomas and stuff like that too. But you see them form. So 1996, not that long ago, right? But a huge portion, I was doing a little bit of digging into why these conferences joined, right? And a huge factor in that was this is 1996 is when television money is really starting to pour into college football. So, you know, people are making those decisions. You have NBC, you know, around that time frame that decides they're just going to latch on to the brand that is Notre Dame and become the Notre Dame Broadcasting Company. You know, you have, you know, Fox signing deals with people, ESPN's, you know, become a valid network for, you know, for college football, for sports. So even at the formation of the Big 12, it was about that. It was about that economics. It was about those television deals and the money coming in from that. And I think to answer your question that you just brought up of why has the Big 12 never expanded? Two things that I think why. One is when these teams left, when the teams left for the SEC, when the team, when Nebraska goes to the Big 10,
Colorado goes to the Pac-12.
The NCAA ruled that the Big 12 conference could still have a conference championship, even though they no longer had two divisions or 12 teams, which had always been a prerequisite. So they still had that income. They still had that visibility of a conference championship game where
national brands in Oklahoma and Texas.
Right. So they felt like they were still valid, I think, even without, because they talked about adding teams. I think some of the teams that are now being added, the BYUs, the Houston, those are teams that the Big 12 has flirted with in the past. This isn't the first time that they're trying to go out and get these members. You know, they've been kind of linked, you know, even not crazy long ago, but even in 2016, reportedly the Big 12 had reached out or started conversation with like Air Force, BYU, UCF, Cincinnati, Houston at that time, like UConn for the basketball side of things. You know, so it's not like they've not even touched the idea of expansion, but again, it comes back to money. Texas inks $300 million deal with ESPN on the Longhorn Network, right? So they're fine. You know, the Big 12 gets a deal with Fox, I think for like $100 billion for 20 years or so, or 13 years or something like that. So again, it's the matter of still having relevance, being on national networks, having that television money coming in. And then frankly, all these conferences, and we can get into this when we talk about the idea of super conferences, all these conferences share those revenues. So you have less players in the pool sharing that income. It's more income for you as a university, as a college, you know?
Yeah. I'm curious too. So I'll briefly touch. I'm curious to see what happens with those deals with the Fox Sports or things like that that they've inked with the Big 12, to see whether they honor those deals going forward now that Texas and Oklahoma have left the conference. You know, I'm not a conference alignment attorney. I don't even play one on TV, but I would I would think that that's kind of a, you know, that's letting that happen. I wonder if that would change the scope of the contract, because that's got to be your money pull is those two schools. Without it, I mean, I'm not trying to be disrespectful at all. I went to Middle Tennessee State University. No one's watching that team, right? Just like no one's watching Baylor. No one's trying to watch Texas Tech or, you know, anything like that. Again, I'm not trying to be disrespectful, to just trying to be honest to what's actually out there.
No, but it feels like it's the start of a demise of a conference. I mean, I think
this is the end of the Big 12.
Like you said,
there's no doubt about this. Is the Big 12 is about to become the American. And if you don't know what the American is, my point exactly.
Right. And the American was a collaboration of the teams left over after the Big 12 split apart and Conference USA. Big East split apart. So, and that's the thing is this feels new, but it's not really new. If you remember in the Big East, like you alluded to, the U was in there. Florida State came from another conference. And this is what happened. They came over to the ACC, which, side note about the ACC, they split that conference in a way so that Miami and Florida would play every time they had a conference championship. And I think they have yet to meet, which is kind of hilarious to me as someone that just openly despises Florida teams. But so it's nothing new. Like the conference realignment has been happening. And in my view, it's been happening since the Big Eight and the Southwest Conference.
Oh yeah. You can definitely see that, you know, Penn State out of the Big Ten or, you know, things like that. I wonder if the Big 12 response to, hey, why haven't you done conference realignment is, well, we did on a macro level, because after 1996, 2 years later, we come up with the BCS, right?
Right.
The World Championship Series.
Yep.
And that was really the BCS put college football on a market that had never seen before. And so that was kind of the trajectory to where we're at now with the college football playoff kind of sort of thing that we got going on here.
I think one thing that the BCS did, aside from just incredibly bolster the amount of money that college football is as an operation, and the reason it became so much money is because you know, this stopped being that regional matchup of your university versus the one down the street. And it started becoming, okay, so this university is the best in your region. How would they face against this other university that says they're the best in their region? You know, like, so that's what the BCS really helped to form. I think it really helped to form. You had the Rose Bowls, right? You had the Big Ten Pac-12 matchups. You had the Big 12 SEC matchups and bowl games. Those things still exist to date, at least where they align that way in certain bowl games. But the BCS really brought together, like, for the longest time, let's take the top two teams and see what happens when they play each other. And it became more of a national sport instead of, in my estimation, a regional sport.
And I think it's healthy that way. I think it's healthy to have it be national instead of regional. And so, you know, my hats are off to the SEC for doing this, for going and grabbing Oklahoma and Texas, because you know, you're able to build the national exposure and increase the nationalism of your conference there.
Yeah.
I'm also curious too, and this might be a stretch, but I want to get your perspective on this. So recently, the last couple of years, we've had the landmark decisions that college athletes are able to retain likeness and are able to, you know, make money off their own likeness, right?
It's a long time coming. Yep.
Yeah. I think what that did, though, was that definitely neutralized or diminished a lot of the perceived power of the NCAA, right? And I think as a whole, and this may be wishful thinking, but as a whole, I think the institution of the NCAA is on its way out. I think it's slowly dying, and I think it's going to go away probably in the next, you know, 10, 20 years.
Yep.
So you mentioned super conferences. Do you see this as a move towards super conferences, where the super conferences then pull out from the NCAA and form their own governing body and then split revenues that way, kind of like a junior NFL league of some sort. And where if not, kind of what are you, you mentioned super conferences. I want to hear what you have to say about where you think this is going to go.
So I think to answer the first question, in my opinion, I personally don't see the NCAA going away. I do see it
not for college football though. You don't see this as.
No, because I would say, in my opinion, it has been losing its power for a while when it comes to major universities. Honestly, the NCAA for programs like Alabama, Ohio State, LSU, Florida, Texas, Oklahoma, USC, you know, Oregon, some of the established programs in college football, all they have been of late is a policing agent for those universities to step in when they feel like they step out of line.
But what's to stop them from just saying, you know what, we're done. We're going to pull out from the NCAA. Not that the NCAA won't have a position. They might have a function with, you know, the Middle Tennessees or things like that, or, you know, college basketball, whatever. Could you see LSU football pulling out of the NCAA? Or someone like Ohio State or, you know, Oklahoma saying, no, we're done. We're going to form our own college football league and we're just going to do it this way.
I don't. And my number one reason is they have the organization that these teams and conferences can at least have some semblance of coherency. Like, I feel like they, you know, otherwise you have, well, the Big 12 is going to go do this thing and or what used to be the Big 12, you know, these super conferences, they very well could. I think that people realize that in order for a sport to succeed, you can't just have the top tiers. Like, you have to have those bases of the other conferences that, you know, you might want to call them feeder conferences or whatever, group of five type conferences, but you have to have a cohesion between each one. And then the other main reason is, I think for those big conferences, the NCAA always provides them with a fall guy or something to pin things on. You know, like, hey, well, the NCAA rules are this or something. But I would say, as far as super conferences, the reason I don't think that they would break away is because I don't think they need to. Two factors. One, I don't think they need the NCAA. I think that they are already growing in their power and their ability to make their own decisions. You know, last year, the Big Ten kind of went back and forth between whether they were going to play games. And that was a decision they were making for themselves. The NCAA had no authority to step, or if they did, it didn't matter, to step in and say, you are playing or you aren't playing, or you're following these rules. Like, look at how each conference handled COVID slightly differently last year, as far as what they allowed, what they had for regulations. I think the other factor is the financial part of it. And this kind of goes back to what I see as the start of all this. Again, the big, you know, around that Big Eight Southwest Conference forming the Big 12. Before that, in 1984, the Supreme Court ruled that universities, not the NCAA, own their sports television rights. And so
I think actually said conferences, didn't they? Isn't that the decision that said that conferences, not the NCAA, own their sports or the TV deals?
Well, I think I don't know for sure. I had seen
that had
a, I had seen
had
universities
with the
because,
Big 12, right? That had to do with the Big 12 specifically, didn't it?
Right. Well, it was a little before. Well, it was 1984. So
Big Eight, rather.
Big Eight. It was for sure. And then a huge factor, and the reason I think it might be universities versus conferences, was Notre Dame is a huge factor in this. Notre Dame has always been able to own their own television rights as a result of that Supreme Court ruling and be an independent. So I thought it was like the university, but I guess what the point I was trying to make is the television rights have now always been in favor of the universities or the conferences specifically, and not the NCAA. So to me, that's why I don't see the NCAA going away, or even the need, if a super team existed or super conferences existed, to pull out of the NCAA. it's interesting to me. I know you're not like a huge soccer fan. I do love watching soccer and getting into
it's
like
a good sport.
But I mean, like I know last year, so they tried the super conference idea and it lasted, I think, a week and a half, where a bunch of the major clubs wanted to pull out of their leagues and form their own super league, because they didn't want to split the money of the revenue of the TV rights of the deals with all these other, they just wanted to kind of hone it in for themselves. So I think the other part of super conferences versus, you know, withdrawing from the NCAA is even with the super conference, you're going to have top dwellers and you're going to have bottom people. So I think the NCAA helps exist for not for the teams at the top, but for the teams at the bottom, even of a super league or even of a super conference.
Sure. So like for the, you know, for the Rutgers, for the University of Illinois, for the, you know, Texas Techs or things like that.
Right. Which Rutgers is on the rise. Shiano's back there. He's correcting all that.
He's getting a lot taken care of.
Right.
No, that's it. I mean, from a college football fan perspective, I don't know as long as there is parity in the league and it's not just regional, I don't mind the idea of a super conference. I mean, I don't think as long as, you know, I think the parity can be addressed by maybe limiting the number of scholarships that a team can give out per year or increasing it. You know, like say for instance, like the NFL, you have the lowest team gets the highest draft pick, right?
Yeah.
So if in the same way, if conferences or the NCAA to say, hey, look, if you finish last year, you have, you know, the conference is given 30 or 100, whatever, and more than that, but, you know, 100 scholarships, and, you know, they divide them up where those who were last get the most scholarships and kind of work your way down from there. Something to kind of help pair.
Something to balance. Do you think that there's parity in college football right now?
No, not at all.
Yeah, I would.
Not
I'd
at concur. All. Not even close.
So do you see that?
Like we know,
Super
like
leagues?
I can tell you right now who's going to be in the championship: Alabama, or it's going to be an Alabama team versus, you know.
Yeah, Ohio Georgia, State, maybe Georgia, Oregon, or maybe Ohio
Oregon,
State.
Or,
maybe,
yeah. But it's going to be Alabama versus someone. I guess, like, right. There's no doubt about it.
So when we talk about the idea of super conferences, right, do you think that – because I think the general perspective is that super conferences will not increase parity, but actually just make – teams even more top. How do you see super conferences specifically affecting like parity in the sport?
So I think it depends how it's done though, right? I think so super conferences that I'm gonna harp on ESPN for a second here. Super conferences that are ESPN driven, ESPN, you know, where ESPN gets the deals and ESPN gets where it all goes to one TV network, I think will continue to be top heavy. But if you can get super conferences and have, you know, ESPN has a cut, Fox Sports One has a cut, CBS, NBC, or whoever else, you know, things like that, I think you can get some parity that way, because then you're putting money into the conferences, you're putting money equally into things like that. But I think you have to make, I think you have to address the root cause, and the root cause I think is recruiting. That's where these players are coming from, right? The recruiting efforts. And so if you enable and make things more equitable for the lesser conferences, then you're going to, you know, help even the playing field. I think you do that by scholarships, and you just limit the number of, if you won a national championship, you just can't offer as many scholarships as the guy who finished last place in the division.
But do you
think it's the most?
I like that idea. I like that idea a lot. My only hesitation to seeing that come to fruition is those people those universities would are decision makers within the scope of college football. So you'd be asking an Alabama, an LSU, an Ohio State to agree to that type of setup.
Yeah, and I would, you know, to like me,
they would have to say, yeah, we're good with winning and losing scholarships.
The way you do that, though, the way you do that is you tie to the TV contract. I mean, if you say, hey, Fox Sports, we're going to, you know, we're the TV rights. We're, you know, we pay your, you know, we pay your bills, and right. We're not going to fund, you know, unless you do this, we're not going to fund it.
That would be an interesting fight. I would actually be really interested in that. I mean, because it comes down to
never happened, but right. I think you have to address the equity of it. You have to do that, because you can argue, you know, any given Saturday, you know, here in Arizona, you know, NAU, Northern Arizona University, beat University of Arizona, and that was first time it's ever happened, like since 1930 something, and you know, a big deal for all my NAU grad friends.
Yeah.
But you have things like that. You have the discussion about Appalachian State, right? Didn't we have one recently this year too? Was it Jacksonville State beat Florida State or something?
Yep. Jacksonville State beat Florida State.
Yeah. So you have things, I mean, you have those things like that, right? But those are all at the mid to lower tier, right? You really don't have a Alabama losing. I know they got scared by Florida, which is okay. You can say, well, you know, Oregon beat Ohio State. Ohio State defense sucks. They're trash. Ryan Day is a trash coach. you know, I mean,
that's not even opinion. That's just fact.
Go look at the. He's not good. He's not a great coach. I hope Luke Fickell comes back to Ohio State and he can coach there instead of be a better coach.
Luke Fickell headed to the Big 12.
Yeah. But no, so you have these different scares, but no, like, again, we know even at the beginning of the season, even if Florida were to beat Alabama, Alabama's still the national championship, because we know they're going to roll the rest of the year. They're, you know, they'll go back and win the SEC championship, and then a one loss Alabama will trump, you know,
some conference winner,
a zero loss, whatever. Yeah. And so I think another way to do that too is by, you know, first, if the most important thing I think is the scholarships and making it equitable for all student athletes and making the competition more equitable for all schools. It's like, is that likely to happen? Probably not. It's wishful thinking. I get it, but it'd be nice if that happened. Right.
Yeah.
The other thing you could do too is
it would probably improve the sport faster. Yeah.
Yeah, like you can see what it is for the NFL, right? You can see teams go from zero to hero quickly in a course of a season, whatever. And you can see your new draft picks come in and hope they do well. Same thing with scholarships. You can see your scholarships come in and do well or whatever. So,
One thing I will say that I've just thoroughly enjoyed, and I know it took a lot of heat, and even today sometimes does take a lot of heat from. A lot of times from people that have just been watching and loving college football forever, is the transfer portal. And I think that has helped the game as a whole tremendously as just college football, let alone the actual players themselves and them getting the chance to go get opportunities and them being able to move from school to school, like every coach can do, to better their situation. But that is something, we're never going to have enough people in the transfer portal where Alcorn State is competing with Alabama. We're probably never going to have enough people in the transfer portal where Kentucky competes on a regular basis with Nick Saban. Alabama is going to be a staple until Nick Saban decides to hang it up, probably.
But here's the thing though, is there parity in the NFL in the past 10 years?
Right. And I would say, honestly, the NFL gets labeled as being a league of parity because the champions are not always the same.
But champions were always the same.
True.
It was just Tom Brady.
At most 10 different teams, 8 different teams. So less than a quarter of the league.
Yeah. But we still think of the NFL as a pretty equitable league, and you know. Yeah.
And the salary cap and the things like that will always lead to that. I think what we've all experienced with the Belichick Brady Patriots, kind of to my point earlier, was that's going to be an anomaly. I don't know that that's repeatable by a lot of decades or a lot of places. Usually dynasties last, even in college football, usually dynasties last, you know, a set amount of time. What Alabama's done is extended that time greatly. But you see, you know, Florida wasn't great a couple of years ago. They seem to be on the rise. USC was a dominant force with Pete Carroll. They're floundering. You know, Ohio State had years where they weren't quite as great. They were usually always competitive in the Big Ten. Michigan at one point was a competing factor for BCS national champions, and they struggled to get, you know, out of that portion of the Big Ten. So you do see things ebb and flow a little bit. I think it'll be interesting to see as we develop, as we continue to go forward. I do think that we are headed towards super conferences. I do think that we are headed to not.
When you say super conferences, do you think we're heading towards a playoff where conference winners are the playoff teams? Like, say you get, you know, eight conferences and you have eight playoff teams, something like that.
Yeah, I personally see college football moving towards a larger playoff. I think that's going to happen. I think that was going to happen from the moment the college football playoff started. I don't think it was ever going to be four teams. You know, it'd be easy to think like, oh, well, if they joined four large super conferences, if the Pac-12, Big Ten, Big 12, SEC, ACC all break down into four super conferences, I still think the college football playoff expands. I don't think it's just going to be those four champions, because I do think that people want to see those, not every year, but maybe once or twice a decade, to see those UCFs get a chance, to see those, you know, back in the day, Chris Peterson, Boise State teams get a chance. We always want to, at the heart of sports, at the heart of most of our fandoms, is seeing that team get a chance that has never had a chance. So, you know, to have those opportunities. So I do see, when I say super conferences, I do see more conference realignment. I don't think it's anywhere near ending. And I think with the way that the money flows and the playoff situation is always topic of change, topic of being in flux, I see it escalating. I think you could make a point, and I'd like to make the point, that in the last 10 years, conference realignment has actually been bananas. It's actually been crazy. Like, the amount of teams that have moved conferences from 2010 is actually really crazy. If you go back and look, we talked about Nebraska. We talked about, you know, like I said, teams in the, you know, even ACC and those realignments, you know, the Big East in my lifetime, and even in beyond my adolescence, even into my, you know, young adult life, the Big East was a conference. It no longer exists. You know, these things have just been ramping up.
What do you think the realignment does then? Because if there is a move to a super conference, and let's say that the super conferences, there'd be, say, six or eight or whatever, and then the winners of that conference go into the the playoff, whatever. What's to stop a Oklahoma or an Alabama or whatever, something like that, going to a lesser conference? That way they have a more of a sure bid.
Like a sure win. That's always going to be, in my estimation, that's always going to be dictated by money. If you do form, you don't even have to wait for the formation of super conferences. A team even floundering, I always like to pick on Vanderbilt. I'm sorry, Vanderbilt. You guys are super smart.
Nice, beautiful campus too.
It's been a long time. Yeah. It's great. Yeah, yeah. Great. You would have.
It's a great campus
down that neck of the woods. But you know, Vanderbilt's never interested in leaving the SEC. They could compete in, you know, other sports as well, but even the main sports, football, basketball, although the basketball team hasn't been horrible some years, because of the revenue, because they could go down and be the best team in, you know, the Sun Belt, but they're not, they're going to take a pay cut as a university. And so that's just not something you're going to see people make the decision to do. I think more often than not, and when we talk about the Big 12, we talk about or like universities like Oklahoma State, universities, even like Kansas State. I think of Iowa State. Iowa State has built up on the college football side, one of my favorite coaches in all of college football. Even on the college basketball side of things, they've been competitive. You know, those are the teams that really suffer in these types of moves because, you know, they're left there holding what's left of the bag when the other teams are moving on to something greater and bigger. But I think once you make that move, I don't see anybody, I personally just wouldn't see somebody, especially not like a Bama, but I don't see any of these teams going backwards in a conference. I think the only way that you go down a level from maybe a power five to a group of five is if you get left behind.
Sure.
And it's now, interesting. You had mentioned ESPN factor too. One thing that's gotten lost, or I don't feel like I've heard it talked about a lot, is I think the Big 12 is still in some form of litigation in with ESPN,
because
of this move and how this came to be for Oklahoma and Texas three for the SEC. So, yeah. I mean, there and honestly, for good reason. If you're the Big 12, you fight every avenue you can to not lose, you know, two of your biggest markets, two of your biggest money producing universities within your college athletics.
Let's talk about this season particularly, and maybe this season, next season. As an Oklahoma fan and a Texas hater, what do you think is going to be, you know, how well do you think Texas and Oklahoma are going to fare in the SEC? You already saw that Texas got just their butts handed in by Arkansas.
Right.
I mean, is Oklahoma going to have a similar awakening, or what's the or how do you think they'll fare?
Yeah,
because remember, like, I mean, I think of like Mizzou and Texas A&M. They had, you know, they joined the league and then they had a couple good years. They had, you know, Mizzou had was it Chase Daniels, their quarterback, yep, at the time, and then, you know, obviously Johnny Manziel too with Texas A&M. So they had some good runs there. Yep. I can't remember.
Yeah, I think it was 2000.
A&M made it to the championship. I think Mizzou did, right? Didn't Mizzou go to an SEC championship a couple times, or at least once? And
there was one year, I want to say around 2008. This makes me laugh all the time. Number one and number two, I believe, I don't remember what order, were Missouri and Kansas. That was that's something that I always like to think back on. We always think like, oh, Bama's always been dominating, or all these teams have always been dominating. But there was that one year Chase Daniels and Kansas had it rolling where they were top teams. I want to say, you know, that they'll succeed, that Texas and Oklahoma should still be able to do well in the SEC because of recruiting, because of the money that those universities pour into their college athletics.
Well, if you can say that though, why hasn't Texas done well then? I mean, you can say Texas does well because recruiting. How does being an SEC change their recruiting footprint? I don't think it does anything for recruiting for Texas.
Well, I don't know. I think that the brand of the SEC is seen, whether we agree with it or not, is seen as superior to other brands. So I honestly think it could help with recruiting. One university that's been real pissed off about this move is Texas A&M. Why is Texas A&M so mad about the move? Because their big brother is joining the conference when they used to be able to go out and recruit as we're the Texas team in the SEC. And now they aren't anymore. So I do think the recruiting helps. I will say this about Oklahoma specifically joining the SEC. I struggle to find an example of a team changing a conference, we'll say moving up in competition in a conference, and doing really well right away. So I do think that it'll take them a little while. I think anybody in the SEC is just waiting for Nick Saban to retire. I think, you know, once Alabama is no longer, and I don't know when that'll be. Like, I really don't know when that'll be, but I do think it'll take Oklahoma and Texas a little bit, like probably a couple years, to really get up to par with the top talent in the SEC. because the style of play is different. Like there's so many different, in my mind, there's a lot of different reasons for that. It's not just recruiting. It's not that those universities can't pull the same kids that a Florida pulls. They can't pull the same kids that, you know, an LSU pulls. It's just going to be getting up to speed with how football is played in the SEC, which is just, it's just different. You're just getting different kids. People talk all the time about, you know, how many middle linebackers from the Big 12 make it into the NFL. And the reason for that is because they have to have speed because everything's so open in the offenses that they face. So that's what I mean by, I think it'll, specifically in college football, I think it'll take a couple of years. I don't see.
So where Florida. Would you rank? So I'm going to go on a limb and say that Oklahoma is clearly a better team of Oklahoma and Texas, right?
They have been for sure. Yeah.
And throughout the years they've been, I mean, Texas as a national program, but just haven't been, they haven't played to their potential on the football field.
In the last 4 years, I would make the argument that Iowa State's the second best team in the Big 12.
Yeah. So where would you rank Oklahoma among SEC schools? Kind of who would you, if you go down the list, Alabama, you know, obviously at top, Georgia, and then kind of where would you put Oklahoma?
Yeah, I would say because I don't know, for whatever reason, Oklahoma seems to struggle to recruit or coach on defensive side of the ball, but no one has a problem with their offense. And to be honest, not too long ago, they've pumped out quarterbacks in the first round for the NFL.
Two Heismans, right?
Yeah, a couple high back-to-back. It was a back-to-back. I think it was back-to-back Heismans. But you think about one of the most traumatic but also enjoyable games, looking back, was the Oklahoma-Georgia college football semifinal. And I'll be honest, you know, they hung with them. Like that was an overtime game. That was a back and forth. You know, and Georgia was really good that year as well. I think that's the year that Tua beat him in the championship, coming off the bench for Hurts and overtime to Devontae Smith, who's also in the league. But I try to think of,
do you think that with the rule changes though for defense and how offensive or offense generating, you know, offense leaning that the rules pretend to be, do you think that opens up an opportunity for Oklahoma to be more competitive in the SEC?
I do. Football, especially college football, and even in the SEC, you see it. You know, the SEC is not winning from even Bama, even, you know, LSU. The SEC, who are the teams coming out of there? It's teams led by Tua Tagovailoa. It's teams led by Joe Burrow. It's offense. So even I think on the offensive side of the ball, a team like Oklahoma can already compete with the SEC. I think of it this way, as far as what's a successful transition for a team like Oklahoma or Texas. And to me, if you go into the SEC and you lose to a team like Georgia, like Alabama, maybe LSU, if you have to play them there, to me, those are respectable losses because those are good teams. I would put Oklahoma's initial ceiling in the SEC at the Florida level. I would put their floor. Yeah, I'll probably get disowned. Might even happen to stumble into divorce attorneys. I put their floor at the level of like Ole Miss. I think if they can't get it together, I think that's about where they're at in the SEC. So I think they'll be somewhere between an Ole Miss and a Florida to start off.
Okay. So do you think if we're looking at the different games that they have going forward in the SEC, their first year in conference, how many losses?
3-4.
3-4, really? What about for Texas? I don't think Texas is a 500 team. I think Texas in the SEC isn't a 500 team. I think they are a Arkansas, Mississippi State,
Yeah, Kentucky.
Kentucky, yep. Cup of mm-hmm. team. I mean, Tennessee has been terrible as well, yeah, too.
Yeah, Tennessee.
A Tennessee type of thing. I think they're in that category of team. I would agree too that Oklahoma will be a, you know, 3 or 4 losses. I think they'll lose to Alabama. I think they'll lose to Auburn, LSU. And then I think they'll probably lose one more. I think they'll get surprised by a team. Whether it be, you know, Ole Miss, a Arkansas, Georgia, I think they'll lose to Georgia. So yeah.
Right. I mean, because having enough in the tank to come back on the road in cowbell country against Mississippi State, having enough to overcome a sloppy first half performance or something like that is still a little more difficult than having the good same
Kansas. You know, the good thing for Oklahoma is when that happens, it's going to happen. When that happens, they can just say, well, you know, it's the SEC, the competition's just better. So, you know, we're just, and the SEC, everybody just beats each other up because we're so good, and, you know, they can roll with that line.
I will say this, because of the history of both organizations, but I obviously am more tied into the correct organization, which would be the correct university, which would be the one in Norman. Mm-hmm. This fan base is not going to be fine with middle of the road SEC. So I think that they will hold. I don't think that you're going to get Oklahoma fans. I don't think you're going to get people in Norman. I don't think you're going to get people in Oklahoma City.
What are they going to do about it?
Shouting SEC, SEC.
They might be okay with it. They might not be okay with it, but man, has anybody told them what happened? This is their new reality. This is what they are. It's like the Colts drafting or training for Carson Wentz. Like, he's going to get injured. Oh, look at that. He's injured. So did anyone tell them?
It could very well be, you know, a reality. I think if you're Oklahoma, if you're Texas, it's tough to sell yourself on this being a real successful endeavor to start. I think if you're Texas, the only sliver of hope that you hold on to is that it's been coaching the last 10 years. And that you believe in Sark, and especially moving into the SEC, Sark's coached in the SEC. I think if you're Texas, that's your hope. That's your line of hope, is that he's going to be able to figure it out. Because I always look at draft, right? I always look at who moves on from your university into the National Football League.
Because that's what they're playing for. That's what kids are playing for. That they're playing for a spot on Sunday. They're not playing for the national championship.
And for whatever reason, Texas doesn't pour kids into the NFL like they did 10 years ago. So some of that's got to be recruiting, but a bunch of it might be coaching. A bunch of it might be 5-star talents that aren't getting brought up correct. From a football standpoint, there's nothing on the kids or their upbringing.
Lack of coaching or talent development.
But
which
I think
you do see in Oklahoma, you do see in those other, other schools like that.
I think if you're Oklahoma, you hang your hat on the fact of the success they've had against SEC teams. Granted, they haven't won championships, but I'd rather be Oklahoma than anybody in the Pac-12 or anybody else in the Big 12. Because at least you've gotten to playoffs. They've still yet to win a playoff game in the college football playoff, but you've been good enough to be considered for it. So I think if you're Oklahoma, you look at, even people want to poke holes in the defense. People want to, rightfully so, people want to poke holes in the way that the Big 12 played. But aside from an LSU embarrassment against Oklahoma, and who did LSU not embarrass that year? You've been good enough to be counted as one of the top 4 teams on multiple occasions in the entire country. So I think that should give you the hope of being in that Florida, LSU, Bama, Georgia line, more so than the back half of the SEC, because you've been there, and in their bowl games, they've beaten SEC opponents, even when they have not been in the, you know, in the college football playoff. Bama beat them, I think, one of the years that they had been in the college football playoff, and that was with Kyler Murray. And it was a bad first half. I think they were up 20 points, maybe 14, 20 points, like that, Bama was. But Kyler, the Oklahoma actually came back. Granted, you know, maybe Bama had the foot off the gas at that point or whatever. But they actually made that game fairly competitive towards the end. The Georgia game I referenced, the SEC is putting these teams in as their best into the college football playoff. And if you're Oklahoma, you can at least hang your hat on the fact that we've been able to hang with them, or we've been able to compete with these teams, you know, previous. Week in, week out, that might be a tougher challenge.
So real quick, as we wrap things up here, I want to hear two winners and two losers from this, from the Oklahoma and Texas, the SEC. And I'll give you mine. So I think the biggest loser to me, I think, is the Big 12. That's the Big 12 and Texas A&M are my two losers. Big 12 because I think they just lost their conference altogether. Texas A&M because I think they lost their chance to be the only Texas school in the SEC. I think the biggest winners for this is ESPN. I think they are able to get the Longhorn Network over in the SEC, get more eyes on it. And I also think the other winner that we didn't really touch on that much, but I think it's the biggest winner here, is the Pac-12. Up until this time, the Pac-12 really hasn't been able to break into that top four teams, the college football playoff. I don't think the college football playoff is going to put three SEC teams in. I think they're going to continue with two plus one, Big Ten team most likely. And so where does that – Big 12 is not going to be able to put anybody in there. And so I think the Pac-12 gains a spot in the college football playoff because of this this move here. But who are your losers? Who are your winners in this conference realignment?
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned that. We have a similar winner. I think ESPN is one of the biggest winners. Conversely, I'll start with my two biggest losers. I would say the two biggest losers in this scenario are Oklahoma, because they've been able to be so dominant in a league and assert that dominance. And I think the road for them to the college football playoff got incredibly harder. The second biggest loser, I would say, is Fox Sports, because of the deal that they've had with the Big 12. They'll figure it out. Fox Sports is actually on the rise. They're doing really good things. I think they've, in the last 5 years, they've grown exponentially. They'll figure it out as far as where they want to put all their money. But for right now, they're probably scrambling, trying to figure out what they're going to do, or what they're going to, put bids in on. I would say, that would be my two losers. My big winners would be ESPN. And I like what you're saying about, Pac-12. There's less seats taken up at the table. Oklahoma, we can say the Big 12 has kept the Pac-12 out. Oklahoma has kept the Pac-12 out of the college football playoff multiple times, because they've been the only team coming from the Big 12 that was worthy of a spot in the college football playoff. So I see ESPN being a huge winner. And then I personally think that, in all honesty, college football fans are going to be the biggest winners. After all this settles, after all of our hurt feelings, about change, after we get used to all the change, it's going to be really fun to have two big programs brought into this conference of some pretty large programs. Like I, aside from my fandom, the idea of Oklahoma playing at Athens, the idea of Florida having to go into Austin and play there on some late Saturday night, that sounds exciting. That sounds exciting as can be to me. Like, so I think as a fan, maybe not as an Oklahoma fan, because I put them in my biggest losers for the reasons mentioned, but as a college football fan, I actually think it'll be an enjoyable experience, much like going from the BCS to the college football playoff. Just nobody's going back. Like, we love seeing those four teams. We want more. Yeah. We want more and more teams. Yeah. And I think this gives ESPN as a network, but also the SEC as a conference, and us as college football fans, just some incredible matchups and even more teams crammed into having to play each other every week.
Yeah, that's exciting. We'll see what happens.
The other thing I would say is I really hope that this kind of can put to death because of the amount of teams that I'll have to play conference opponents. Some of the cupcake weeks where, you know, somebody's playing some of these schools from, like, you know, maybe some of the teams from the SEC. And I know that trickles down in the economics.
Yeah, I think there's some requirements too. I think the NCAA has some requirements where, you know, a 1A school has to play a 1AA school at least once a year or something like that.
Right.
I think there's some.
Which is still good for the overall sport, you know.
Yeah.
And you saw
Jacksonville State beating Florida State. So you have those things like that. You have Appalachian State over Michigan. So you still have those pretty cool things that happen.
Yeah.
But I think
I'm excited as a fan to see these matchups, to see how this all pans out. And I just think as college football fans, which we are and which many people are, I really don't see an immediate downside anyways to having these two stalwart type of universities join a conference such as the SEC.
Yeah, I think it's good for the brand of college football. I hope it elevates. I think it's going to, I think Oklahoma will bounce back, maybe not right away, but eventually though. But I do hope that this elevates the brand of Texas football and you know, maybe creates reinvigorates the Texas Oklahoma rivalry. And, you know, if we can actually make that competitive once again, it'd be kind of nice.
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of adorable to me in a way that they're a package deal, you know, going into the conference together of just that rivalry and that history still being able to remain intact. So
yeah, it's important.
Yeah.
Well, good deal. What a crazy world to be alive in with conference realignment and things like that.
It is. We don't do well with change, but it's not always bad.
Yeah, most of the time it is. Let's be honest.
Most of the time it is.
Let's be honest. Let's not sugarcoat this. No, so hopefully next time when we get together, we can chat about where things are at in the other football league, the National Football League, and do kind of a review of what's going on there, and hopefully moving forward we'll be a little more consistent on that again. I don't want to say apologize for our time off, because I'm legitimately not sorry for any of it at all. But if our listeners are so inclined to be bothered by that, I don't know what to tell you.
On the flip side, we're happy to be
back. I'm happy to be back. I'm happy to do this. Hope you enjoy it. I think it was, life happens. It gets in our way and you don't do this full time. This is kind of a fun hobby for us to do on the side, but.
Yep. Happy to be back talking sports with you.
Absolutely.
Happy to be back sharing our thoughts. You, as always, feel free to give us feedback on your thoughts of conference realignment as you listen to this, you know, comment to us and let us know, you know, what you're thinking as far as this being good, being bad. Maybe you're not from any of these regions, the southern regions, you know, what's the view from the north, what's the view from people on the outside looking at it type of thing too. And as you mentioned, can't wait to start talking some NFL, an extended season there for the first time. And getting into, after a couple weeks into the NFL here, seeing what teams are good and what teams are looking like here. So football's back. We're happy to be back with you guys, and hope you enjoyed listening.